Welcome to Opportunity Knocks. I'm your host, Todd Patton, and I'm so happy to have with me today the NFL sports agent that I look up to, Brett Tesler. Brett, so great to have you here.
Oh, great to be with you, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Always enjoy any time together. So when you asked if I was able and willing to do this, I was more than happy.
I appreciate that, man. And, you know, the whole premise for this show, Brett, is I want people to get motivated, inspire people. I want to inspire myself, you know, and I know a little bit about your backstory. It's pretty incredible of how you became, because look, as a kid, I think, you know, if you played sports, a lot of us wanted to be sports agents, you know, like as a kid, I remember mine, believe it or not, I wanted to be a GM and then a sports agent, but it's all, you know, and then of course, Jerry Maguire came out and then the whole world wanted to be one. So it's such a competitive business and I'd love to hear your story. So why don't you take me back to the Purdue days or maybe even a little bit before that? Cause I heard you had a hard time getting into Purdue originally, but tell me about how you turned it around and I'd love to hear the story.
Yeah. So for me, it was not an overnight success story. And as you mentioned, Todd, how you at one point dreamed of being an agent. So did I. And so have so many other young men who love sports and are interested in business. And, you know, I just wasn't sure how I was ever going to do it because school was never really my thing. You know, starting at a young age, was not the best student, failed the seventh grade, had to do that twice. Almost failed the ninth grade, graduated high school with the second lowest GPA in my class.
Wow.
And the reason why I share this, if there's any young people listening to this, don't do that. I got away with it. It doesn't mean.
And you know what, Brett, it's a lot different now, right? When we were younger, because they wouldn't even consider now, you know, 4.8s and, you know, it's wild. It's a different time now. How did that switch happen? As you struggled in school, was it that you just weren't motivated to study? Like what was the.
I didn't really find it interesting. And, you know, fortunately for me, my kids take after their mom when it comes to the academics. So they're the straight A students in the honor schools. They're the ones that are going to take the easier road than I did. But so I ended up, you know, realizing at the end of high school that the joke is over and it's, you know, what am I going to do? And so I ended up going to school in Louisiana my freshman year. And from there, I was able to get good enough grades because at that point I was taking it serious to be able to transfer to a good school like University of Tampa. And then I was there for a couple of years and had a great time, great school, but didn't feel like I was really getting the full big college experience with sports and all that stuff. And so then not only did I have the grades, but I had the hours. And at that point, you know, I could have went. North Carolina, South Carolina, Ohio State, got accepted to a bunch of schools, went and visited Purdue, and that seemed like the right fit for me.
Did you have any connection to Purdue?
No, or was connection it just to Purdue. Just thought it was a great school, thought it was a great academic opportunity. I always had a very high regard just for Purdue. Just always thought it was a great school. And once I had the opportunity to go there, went and visited with my family, and it just felt like the right place. And so that's what I did.
So you're in Purdue now. How does this, I mean, because what are you studying? Were you studying to be an agent at that time or a lawyer?
So my plan was to try to pursue sports agency. But you got to remember, Todd, I mean, this is still mid-90s. Mm-hmm. This is before Jerry Maguire. This is before the internet. This is before any colleges had sports management curriculum. My plan was to get a political science degree to end up going to law school to try to become an agent. But as it turns out, the opportunity came before I had the opportunity to do law school. I ended up graduating the same year as Mike Allstott at Purdue, you know, great fullback, all pro.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so we had some common friends and I got introduced to him. And
so you weren't a sport agent at the time. You weren't an agent.
A student.
You were just a student.
I was still in school.
And what'd you do?
And so I got the chance to meet him and, you know, hung out a little bit. And said to him, I said, listen, man, you know, I've always wanted to be involved in this kind of stuff. Let me get you some marketing deals. I'm like, you know, let me start getting you set up with some appearances at the mall, things like that. And so, you know, we start doing some local autograph signings.
And he was good with that. He was like,
great. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? Thousands of dollars of cash, you know, at that age. And this is way before NIL stuff or anything. But this is after he had played.
So that took balls, though, for you to, like, you're a student. And then you said, hey, You didn't even say I have a company or anything. You said, that's pretty awesome. It's an opportunity knocking. And you saw it all style. You must have built a trust and a relationship, a friendship with them, where you felt enough to say, let me go and try this out.
So there was a memorabilia store in the mall. And again, being a fan of sports, like I always was, I used to hang around this place, got to know the owner a little bit. So immediately I thought, hey, here's a way that I can hook them up. And Mike made good money. I made a little money off it. And I'm like, gee, this isn't too bad. And so from there, he then gets drafted by Tampa Bay. And I say, Mike.
Pretty high too, right?
Yeah, he got drafted in the second round, which for a fullback is as high as possible. And I said to him, hey, you know, I just came from Tampa. And so I know a lot of people in that market, a lot of different businesses. Let's just continue to do this. So, you know, got him more appearances, car dealerships, things like that. And then before you know it, we're doing bigger deals as he's becoming a better player. We're doing bigger deals with companies like Coca-Cola. And then ultimately I get him on the cover of a Sony game. And so at that point, things started getting real.
Yeah.
A sideline appearance deal, which at that time I got him more money for it than some of the top, top names in the league. And I'd gotten certified with the NFL Players Association. At that time, you did not have to have a law degree. These days, I believe they want you to have a postgraduate degree of some sort, but obviously I'm grandfathered in. I've done over 600 contracts throughout the entire NFL.
That was your first contract, right?
So I didn't handle his team contract. Okay. I handled all his marketing. And then at the same time, I had gotten certified with the NFL Players Association to start being able to do team contracts. And at that point, you didn't have to have a law degree. Now you do, but I'm grandfathered in. And obviously I've gone on to do over 600 contracts throughout the entire league and counting. At the time, a couple of his teammates in the next year, not the highest rated guys, but still guys who had a shot. I was interested in working with them. Mike put in a good word for me, and obviously they looked up to him, and they didn't have a ton of agents going after them. And one of them ended up making it on the Jets and the other made it on the Chargers. And then the following year, another guy from Purdue ended up being my first draft pick. He was drafted in the sixth round by the Patriots, the same round that some quarterback named Tom got drafted.
Right. Same round?
Same round as Brady. Yep, sixth round. And those two actually played against each other in the Big Ten. So they were roommates for a couple of years. So I used to go stay at Brady's place.
Wow, that's cool.
Run around with those guys.
Yeah.
It was good keeping up with him over the years, and certainly very proud of everything he became.
So let me ask you something, Brett, because when you mentioned you started out at least as a marketing agent, right? I mean, you were handling the marketing for, and I always wondered this, Hamlin, I think it's Hamlin, the guy that, I might be saying his last name wrong, the guy that died on the field and then.
Damar Hamlin.
Hamlin.
Yeah.
I noticed, I don't know if it was a friend of his or somebody, it wasn't his agent, but they said it was his marketing guy who did all this, like, I guess he was answering the questions. He was like the spokesperson for that. Is that something that agents work with marketing people, or are they, you know what I'm saying? Is there usually a two-person team handling the marketing of it, like the trade shows and sign up, or is that something the agent does?
It can be a separate thing, or it could be the same thing. So I naturally handle any marketing opportunities, you know, that most of my guys are able to get. And NFL players aren't as marketable as, say, NBA players, even baseball players. So, you know, for every one Aaron Rodgers who you see on commercials, State Farm, whatever it is, there's hundreds of other great players who, you know, again, they're great. They make a ton of money, but the marketing opportunities aren't necessarily there. So besides things like shoe deals, local autograph appearances, things like that, that you'll get approached to do, I help my guys with that stuff. But then if you end up having a guy who is extremely marketable, then, you know, you might pass him off to a big marketing firm in New York or something like that.
Collaborate with him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So that's a great start, but now how you've built it over the years and you've grown. So how, like, what skill did you learn from this that you could share with us that said, hey, if there's one thing I could take away, I mean, I know there's a lot of different things, but there's one skill, it's this. What is that?
You got to remember, Todd, in this business, and this is the unfortunate thing, because I get calls from kids every day, you know, and I always swore that if I was ever fortunate to make it in this business, I would always take the time for people who wanted to be agents to kind of talk to them, point them in the right direction. The same way a couple guys who were successful in my business did with me. I thought they were really cool. One of them is one of my best friends to this day. And then there were some guys that weren't so nice. And I remember that too. So I believe in treating people the way you want to be treated. And so, you know, when these people reach out to me, I have to be honest with them. And so on one hand, I don't want to dissuade them. I would never tell someone not to follow their dreams. Mm-hmm. I did, and it worked for me. But on the other hand, there's not like a set of ABCs to follow mm-hmm. to become a successful agent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to become an attorney, do great in undergrad, get into law school,
right.
do great there, intern with a law firm, join a law firm, become a partner in a law firm, start your own law firm, get clients. It kind of takes on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. In this business, it's not that way, Todd, because mm-hmm. you can have the highest GPA in your class. You could be the most skilled negotiator. You could be the most sincere, caring, hardworking, high mm-hmm. character person out there. But unless you're able to get clients to sign with you.
But the question is, how do you get them to sign with you? Because there's something that you have that sets you apart. And, you know, I like to say it's IQ and EQ. IQ, which, by the way, I don't have that. But emotional intelligence, I do have. And it seems to me you have a nice balance of both of them. But that emotional intelligence, but knowing that you're going to go to bat and they trust you. I mean, there's got to be so much trust in that. So can you touch a little bit about that side of it, the trust side of it? Because I know your clients, it's like a family to you, right? I mean, I see them over your house. You bring your kids to the games. I mean, that's like you make it a family event. So how did you learn how to do that? And is there anything that you could share with us on ways to go above and beyond on that side of it, on that EQ, you know, that emotional side?
I appreciate the kind words. And I think the key to my success has just been I'm real. And again, it comes back to approaching people how you would want to be approached if you were in their shoes. It comes down to giving them the kind of representation that you would want if you were them. And that's what I've tried to do since day one. And somehow, some way, despite the fact that I was competing with some of the biggest agencies mm-hmm. in the business early on, real proven agents, guys with unlimited resources, mm-hmm. unlimited means. And yet I was still able somehow, some way to get these guys to go with me. Honestly, Todd, I think you'd have to ask them what it is about me they like. Yeah. But I just think that when you go with me, you know what you're getting. What you see is what you get. I've never tried to be someone I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I think they know that when they sign with me, they're going to feel like they're the only player I represent.
Boom. There it is. That's it. And I know that's the case. I mean, I've seen you and I've seen how you act with your clients. I want to talk a little bit about, because your business is real tough because you have your clients, that's one side, but on the opposite side, who you're negotiating against, you have to have a relationship with them too, right? So that's a balance that's tough. But being now that you've been in the business for so long, I'm sure you know a lot of the general managers you're dealing with, right? Is that that's
general managers, team negotiators, owners, and stuff.
You have to have thick skin, right? To do what you do,
it's a pretty intense business. Yeah. There's a lot riding on this stuff. And so that's a responsibility for my clients that I do not take lightly. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it as I'm just doing this guy's contract. I'm looking at it as if I do a great job for this guy, mm-hmm. you know, this guy, if he's even a great player, is going to be retired by the time he's in his early 30s. So what's going to happen with him the next 50, 60 years of life? And so I put the pressure on myself that if I don't do an amazing job for this guy, in 15, 20 years, this guy can have to be, could need to be putting together a resume, mm-hmm. Having to go out and get a job. But if everything's handled right on this end, he'll never have to worry about what he's going to do when his playing days are over. As well as he'll never have to worry about how he's going to pay for his daughter's wedding. He's never going to have to worry about how he's going to afford putting his kids through college. So this is the kind of pressure I put on myself to succeed for my clients.
Fantastic. So tell me what's next. I mean, you built a nice business. And is that something that you want to just continue to build? Is there other ventures that you're looking at? Is there anything? Because obviously, I know you spend a lot of time working in this business and it's consumed a lot of your time. But I'd love to hear some other ideas or anything else you have going on. If there's any, even if it's something in your space that maybe you're saying, you know, we're working on something here or doing anything. Is there any news that we can look at or no?
Unfortunately, nothing. Not. And right. For me, this isn't just what I do. It's what I am.
Yeah.
And when you've been doing something for 27 years, I mean, Todd, I've been doing this just about the youngest agent when I got into this. And, you know, started out where the guys I were representing were no younger than me. Over time, obviously, you transition from being like the brother to like the big brother to like just a friend, a true friend, somebody they know that's going to have their back through thick and thin. And I love what I do. And every morning I wake up, I pinch myself, you know, because I believe that I feel like one day it's all going to be a dream.
And I'm sure you pinch yourself when I saw a picture of you and Brandon on a field. It was a big game. I can't remember. Maybe it was like the Pro Bowl or something. But how cool is that, bringing your son to experience that with you? Because as a kid, you know, that's what we dream of, to be on a field.
So it's amazing, Todd. And I have to remind my kids, hey, not everybody gets to do this. And so, yes, when as a family, we're down on the field for a Super Bowl, when I'm on the field at, you know, college all-star games with the top players from the country that are going to be the top incoming rookies in the NFL, it's one of those things where I never take it for granted. And so, you know, you mentioned the Pro Bowl. You talk about opportunity. Look at my client, Raheem Mostert. Here's a guy who guy came into the league as an undrafted free agent, was not invited to the combine, was not invited to any all-star game, was not thought of as a guy who could ever make it. And yet we signed as an undrafted free agent with the Eagles. He takes advantage of the opportunity. He led the league in rushing his rookie preseason, but he still got caught up in the numbers thing. And so they
decided. He led the league in rushing?
His rookie preseason.
No, yeah, preseason. But still.
Yeah. So he showed, you know, he showed in a limited opportunity there that, you know, there's something there. But still got caught up in a numbers crunch and the Eagles let him go. And then we went to the Dolphins and he was down here for just maybe 2-3 weeks. And they decided to cut him. And then we get picked up by Baltimore and he's there for maybe 6-7 weeks. Then they let him go. We finished that season up with the Browns. Next preseason, they let him go. Then we're on the Jets practice squad for like a week and they let him go. Then we go to the Bears for about a month. Then they let him go. And then ultimately we end up with the 49ers and the rest is history.
So that was six or seven. I don't remember. I lost
seven
count.
Teams. Yep.
Seven teams cut him.
Seven teams in a year and a half. And then he ends up in San Francisco and it was just the right place at the right time. And, you know, they finally gave him the opportunity and he took advantage of it. And then the next year he ends up leading them to the Super Bowl. A couple running backs in front of him get hurt and he ends up just taking over. And before you know it, he's the NFC Championship game MVP, leads that team to the Super Bowl. And then fast forward a couple of years, here he is back in Miami where we signed as a free agent last year.
That had to be amazing. I mean, he's not from down here, is he?
He's from Daytona area.
Okay.
He's from New Smyrna Beach, so right near Daytona. So he's a Florida guy. He was a Dolphins fan as a kid.
He was.
And so was I, Todd. The amazing thing is, and just to show like just how in life anything is possible. I remember in the 1984 season, we had season tickets. I'd always go with my parents and Mark Clayton was my favorite player. And I remember when he set the team record for touchdowns in the season, I was there. You know, I watched all those games with my family. And then amazingly enough, Todd, a month ago, I'm sitting at the Monday night game against Tennessee with my 14-year-old son, who's just a couple years older than I was.
Yeah.
And we watch Raheem break Mark Clinton's record.
How cool. And your son knows Raheem, right?
He knows Raheem well. Raheem's been in the league 9 years. So my son was like 4 or 5. And so now he's 14.
So wait a second. 9 years he's been?
Yeah.
And he made the Pro Bowl.
Yes, Pro Bowl star.
And he was the player of the, was it player of the week?
AFC player of the week, yep.
So that's awesome. At 31?
Yeah, 31 years old, but low mileage. That's the key with running backs. People over prioritize age when it comes to running backs. It's not about the age. It's about the miles.
Yeah.
It's about the carries.
Yeah.
And so there's some running backs that are 26, 25 that already have more career carries than Raheem does combined. So he's got a lot of strength in his tires.
He looks so good. Like he's so fast. I mean, when I saw his speed of 4.39 or 4.4, I was like, how is that? Because he's not a tiny little guy. Like Hill's smaller. Like I can see him be fast. I'm like, no, they're right up. They're close, right? It's only like a 0.1 second, which is remarkable. By the way, I got to tell you a quick story. I don't think I've told you this yet. Talk about Dolphin fan. I was a huge fan, right? And it was 91. I was a sophomore at Taravella. And my wrestling coach said, we're going to do the we're gonna caddy at the Pro Am Honda Classic, and I live right across the street in Cypress Run. And I was like, oh, I'm in. We sign up. My mom wakes me up that morning, screaming at me, "You overslept. You what? You better get in your bike and run." You know, back then we rode bikes. So I got on the bike and I went a mile and a half, 2 miles, and they had bleachers set up with all the caddies, you know, that they were there, and there was two of them. And I'm, my heart's beating. I'm like, not only my mom just beat me down, but now my coach is going to get me. I just overslept, you know, and I get up there and I'm like thinking in my head, how do I get up? As I'm saying this, a Mercedes pulls up and it's Dan Marino walks out and he puts his bag down and they come up. It was almost like perfect timing. They go, the guy with the announcement goes, Billy Berrios, please, you're up for caddying. And I know that's Marino's bag. And Billy's one of my good friends and he wasn't there. And I go, Billy. And he goes, Billy, grab his bag. And he follows me. And it's my, I mean, this is like, as a kid, I'm like, this is Dan. And this is really happening in real life. Yeah. So my heart's going like this. And the guy goes, Dan, I want you to meet Billy Berrios. And Billy's one of my good friends. The ending of this is even better. So Dan shakes my hand. He says, Billy, great to meet you. I said, great to meet you. And I couldn't even talk. So now we're on hole one. It was Offerdahl, Marino, Bernard Langer was it. And Duper, ironically, was in the group ahead of us, right? He wasn't in ours, but so now we're teeing up. And this is the main group. So if you remember a sports reporter named Jim Varsalone, he had red hair, bushy hair. He wrote for like the Coral Springs News. And I think Sun Sentinel now he writes for, but in South Florida down here, he wrote for like my, when I played Little League Baseball and soccer, if I scored a goal, you know, he'd write like the, so I knew him and he knew of me. He's there. He's like, Pat, I got to get this story. He writes a story and it goes in the paper. And the headline was, and I'm going to show it to you, Sleepy Patton leads quarterback in pro. Doesn't even mention Marino. So, and the whole story is about how I overslept and Billy Berrios every year he posted on Facebook and it pops up as a memory. So every year I get a call from him saying, yep, you won. So that's my damn Marino story.
It's great. It's
awesome. But, man, look, I want to finish with this because your story is awesome. It's inspiring. I love hearing it.
The best part, the best opportunity story I have was the greatest thing. I always tell everybody that I owe everything in my life to this business. And I do, because I ended up meeting my wife, Lonnie, who you've known for years.
Yep.
I met her in the airport on the way to one of my players' weddings in Denver. You know,
if you weren't an agent, you would never, have this life.
I never would have been there. I never would have met her. Wouldn't have my kids. Wouldn't be here talking.
Isn't that wild? So
life.
Talk about an opportunity knocking. We could talk business all day, but there it is, man.
And the thing was, I had about like 5 minutes to get her number before we had to get on a plane. So probably my best recruiting pitch ever.
Well, I want to kind of hear it. Was it smooth? I mean, was it she was up on the stairs, right?
She was going down the escalator.
She was going down.
I saw her. So we're going into security and I'm thinking, oh, great. You know, I'll have time to talk. We come down. There's nobody in the line. She goes right through. By the time I get through with all my laptop, this and that, she's gone. And so then I go down to my gate and sure enough, you know, her gate's right next to it. So she's sitting there. There's an empty seat. I asked her if I could sit with her. And introduced myself very quickly, asked her if she had a boyfriend. She said, no. I said, good.
So you went right in.
Went right in, right in, brother.
That's awesome.
And got the number. And then when I got back in town from that trip, we got together and we haven't been apart since.
Awesome, man. What a story and what a way to finish this. Brett, an honor. And I'm so glad we did this. And you did this again. By the way, Brett came the second time for me. He didn't have to do that. And I really appreciate that. Unfortunately, the air wasn't working in my Sprinter. We were both sweating bullets. I'm going to put some pictures up of that because it was funny, but I really appreciate you doing it again. And look forward to what the future of you and your company and your family. It's been fun to follow you, man.
Anything for you, man. Glad we could do it.
You're the best, man. Thanks, brother.